What's up, guys, and welcome back to the third ever episode of the FIRE Mafia podcast. In case you're new, FIRE stands for Financial Independence, Retire Early, and it's called Mafia because, well, we are both Italians. I'm Angelo, I'm based in Austria, and I have a YouTube channel called Peer-to-Peer Investing Europe, and I'm back today with my friend Giorgio.
I'm Giorgio, better known as Mr. Rip. I also have a blog and a YouTube channel and whatnot.
And I think today we are going to start by discussing something that, like, what has been on our mind over the past week that might be different for you than it was for me. And also, I think I also saw some interesting articles that you wrote about, so maybe we can discuss those as well.
Okay. I love the smell of flame in the morning. Okay,
and,
about me.
Oh, and just to finish. And in the end, we're going to see how all of that links into a topic that we also want to talk about, and that is inflation today. And how also maybe we have a different mindset on how to protect from inflation. Maybe that you have a more traditional mindset, maybe that includes gold or something, and maybe I have some more millennial mindset on that, who knows?
Interesting. I think finally, for the first time today, we are going to be on different sides of some debate. That's amazing. I love it. And I know that we are both here to learn, so there's no wall versus wall thing. Yeah, okay. So what's been on my mind in this week? A lot of things happened for me. I just published a post literally 1 hour ago about just updates on what's happening with my blog and with my, influencer career. I got interviewed by one Swiss television show, and I was invited to another Swiss television show. I'll be twice on Swiss TV in April, and once actually live in studio. I'm going to Lugano in mid-April to record in a talk show. This
nice.
Is like, that's nice. That's something I've never done, so why not? Plus, I'm writing, I'm fighting with streaming products because with my YouTube channel, I thought, okay, let's just go low effort. Let's just open like a laptop with a webcam and a microphone and stream on the internet. But it's actually a hell of a work. I don't know how people stream things. It's really a lot of work. So I, of course, installed one software, installed another one. I bought a better Microsoft. I bought a better camera. I'm fighting with bit rates, with frame rates, with Streamlab OBS. And that occupied half of my week. I was planning to release a video, like a recorded video, not a live one, but I had no time. Meanwhile, I've published this maybe controversial post about cryptocurrencies that also like started some flame on several platforms I had to follow and defend myself. It's been a lot of work. So it seems like a month ago we talked last time, Angelo. What about you?
Yeah, crazy. It was just 1 week. For me, it was, it was similar in a way. So like we discussed already, we both have our birthdays in April. And so I was looking forward to celebrating like in a week or so with the family. And then first of all, in Austria, again, they decided, oh, wouldn't it be fun if we close down everything again and we don't allow you to do anything anymore and meet people? So that has been a bit of a bummer. That would be my second lockdown birthday, which is lovely.
Oh, no.
So that's the one part. And yeah, I also got a new microphone. So finally I have better audio. And I figured out how to connect my DSLR camera as a webcam, which I'm happy about. So I also lost about half a week trying to figure that out.
Yeah, this is amazing.
It's going to be worth it.
The quality of our streaming is improving. In like in another week, we'll be Joe Rogan.
It's going to be virtual reality soon if we keep this up. So
yeah,
it's gonna
sure.
Be nice. Yeah, and my thoughts have been a little bit on like from an investment perspective. It's just interesting because I have a small percentage of my portfolio also in cryptocurrencies, which is also what we're going to discuss afterwards, relating to your article, and like. It's just like human nature that we like you see, oh, this one part is performing very well, or it's human nature to think, oh, why keep it at this small part? But I think we have to keep the risks in mind. And it's just interesting always to re-experience these things, even though I've lived some of those things already, and I always think I learned my lesson. But okay. I don't add any extra money. And I think it's still something we should discuss, because some people might be in a similar situation where they get the usual FOMO. They say, oh, people are making so much money there. Why should I invest into something boring like an index fund? I can double my money here. It's so easy. And yeah, so I think
that's a problem. As you said, we're talking about an infrastructure, which is cryptocurrencies. Those should be infrastructure, not things you invest in because they will make you much more money in the short term. That's called another thing. That's called a Ponzi scheme, especially if it's out of thin air. So, okay, my view on cryptos is a bit dark, but I'm here to be challenged, so that's okay. So far, I've met no one who told me, hey, I think Bitcoin is like gold, so I'm going to invest. It's like $50,000, $60,000 at the moment. I think it's going to be stable and keep up with inflation in the next 10 years. So yeah, I aim to still have 50K in 10 years. No one, literally no one who's buying Bitcoin now is of course like sure that it's going to reach 100,000 in a week and then maybe even a million. And what does it mean that it reaches a million? It means that someone is willing to pay a million. And the guy or the lady or whoever is willing to pay a million for the thing. Is it going to pay a million because that person thinks that it's going to be stable over the next 10 years? No, because it's of course going to 10 million. And I'm not playing this game. The usual response I get from fanatics, from like people who are all into crypto, like not in changing the world with crypto, but in making a lot of money with crypto, they say, oh, you are of course just angry that you didn't like participate in this wealth creation out of thin air for everybody. So you should be, I don't know, I have the Italian words for it. I don't know the English word. You should be just, I don't know, nagging or I don't care. Well, of course, if I had like some money in crypto, I would be happy, but I would probably have sold like as soon as it went 2x from the $10 that it was their price when I discovered what Bitcoin was. So so probably I would be the guy who bought two pizza with 10,000 Bitcoin. By the way, that guy didn't regret it. He said that there was no way he would still have had 10,000 bitcoins.
Of course.
And being alive without nobody pointing a gun to hand over their wallet.
Sure. And maybe that was necessary as well to kind of get Bitcoin more popular, to have a use case in the beginning. And that's also something we have noticed now more recently, that it's
I think it has become less of a
method of exchange, the Bitcoin. And it's more like, okay, now it's like it's a way to maintain value and to store value. And like I understand that perspective, and it's perfectly fine if you have a different perspective on that.
But Satoshi Nakamoto, I mean, wrote something different in the white paper of Bitcoin. And that's okay if say, oh, by the way, yeah, maybe that's not a very efficient forms of payment. I'm sorry, we are not killing banks. So we started with that in mind. It's like couch surfing. We started with like making the world a better place, and then it's kind of shut down. Now you have Airbnb, and then you have like hotels. So we failed in this kind of revolution. Yeah, so now it's like sports betting. So people are like betting that it goes up and down. Okay, good. I mean, I don't see any impact in my daily life of the blockchain. And we're trying hard since 2008. With this version, actually since 1982, the first theories of blockchain. So far, I don't see any impact. The only impactful thing has been the non-fungible token. So that's the only thing we can say that it has an impact. And okay, for me, those are Ponzi squared.
But... Did you spend your millions already on some beautiful digital image?
Sure. I mean, I've seen a JPEG, a bitmap of a crypto, how's it called? A CryptoPunk. It was amazing. It was at 32 by 32 bits. And there's a guy with a pipe, and that was just 800 Ethereum. So roughly all my money. Yeah. I mean, that was on sale.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That's great. That's really another interesting thing to follow.
Okay.
A lot of people lose a lot of money, I think, with NFTs.
Did you buy some land on Earth 2.0?
Ah, no, thank you. I don't even buy actual real estate in the real world. I don't need it digitally.
Oh, come on. The old real estate. Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, okay. So for me, I understand the use case for Bitcoin. It's one of the simpler ones to explain. And yeah, of course, you can say it changed a little bit from just the monetary, just you're not going to use it to pay at Starbucks, even though that could also potentially now with the PayPal integration, these things, it could be a little bit more easy because then you don't have to do the actual transaction, but they can do a big one at the end of the day. It could be simplified.
Off-chain.
Of course, but then again, you get away from like the blockchain thing, the use case. Now, for store of value, I get it. We have a limited supply. We know exactly how many Bitcoin there are. Of course, you can split the chain and you can do separate things. But as we have seen in the past, they have not the believers in Bitcoin in the end, they always went back to the original chain. And somehow the community has decided that even if it's silly like this, to keep the block size this small and to have higher transaction fees, that they want to go down this route, and we're going to see if it's the right one. But I find it kind of interesting on how many also billionaires, how many person. Now we can say, okay, Elon Musk is a bit of a crazy person. Like, he's not the average Joe.
Okay, yes.
But a lot of
how many people can pump and dump
are also like getting into the space, and they're slowly opening up to Bitcoin. And even Ray Dalio now kind of revised his mindset. And he said, okay, he understands that he doesn't know that much about it, but he's kind of opening up slowly. And now we even heard that Fidelity, for example, they also already announced that they want to launch an ETF. So we're going to see if that's going to be approved in the US. I think it's interesting.
Of course, there are already ETFs on cryptos. So there is one with ticker Moon. There are already ETFs. I have a friend who invests
Not in the US. In Canada, there are some already. But in the US, not yet. And in Europe, we have ETCs. They're exchange-traded commodities. Or no, ETN, exchange-traded notes, I think. Something like this.
Yes. Amazing.
You need even more trust. Yeah.
By the way, I mean, of course, someone will jump on the winning bandwagon until it goes. Maybe they had their quant analysts say, hey, guys, this should last for another 2-3 years. Let's announce today that we are joining this thing and see what happens. People would invest. We are like neutral. So if we just generate another mutual fund and people will invest, we can charge 1-3% because the expense ratios of these funds are not like 0.03. It's not VT.
Sure.
They are in the single digit thing. So, I mean, neutral entities, they have all the incentives to launch cryptos ETFs.
But
if tomorrow there is a new world dictator that says that the earth is flat, I'm pretty sure that many people would say, yeah, sure, I always say that's been flat. So it doesn't prove anything, that huge player. If Ray Dalio, I mean, I don't know about like Ray Dalio recent, like he's thrashing about cash since a decade. And of course, there are problems with cash. There are problems with fiat currencies. I'm not saying that. And I think that in 20 years from now, maybe some purely digital forms of money. If I imagine the world in 50 years, I don't see like piece of metals and banknotes being exchanged anymore. And that's
not
one
paying
thing
with gold. I thought everybody's gonna pay with gold then because everything broke down. The cans of tuna and gold is gonna be the payment method.
It's hard to transport. I mean, no, you don't want that. In the end, you will have only digital currencies. I'm not sure that, I mean, I'm pretty sure that current cryptocurrencies are crap. It's like if you saw that internet was a cool thing in 1970, 80, and then say, oh, holy shit. So this Johnson computing system is going to be the future. I'll bet everything. Give it like 20, 30, 40 years, and then Amazon, Google will be born. I'm not betting on Kodak because I think pictures are amazing. Pictures are important. Yes, give it time. Bitcoin is just the Kodak. It's just the something, the proof of concept that I'm not sure. A transaction in Bitcoin consumes the same amount of energy of a million transactions on other.
Sure, I understand that perspective, but you have to also remember that people are not they're mining Bitcoin for to help process the transactions and to generate Bitcoin and to keep the network on. They're not going where the electricity costs are really high. They go where they're very low or where there's a lot of unused electricity and weight. And this could give people an incentive also to drive more renewable energy and to find new ways to generate energy because they have a financial incentive now to do this. And also you have some generators that are generating a certain amount of energy. And then you have off-peak hours where they don't have a good way to store it and they can use it to process transactions and for the Bitcoin network. So it's interesting. It's not so black and white to just say, okay, it consumes a lot of energy. I know this can be improved for sure.
I'm oversimplifying. I know that I'm oversimplifying.
There's a lot of crap that consumes a lot of energy.
It is consuming a shitload of energy. And they're not only mining at night when the energy cost is lower.
Of course. But
And if they're using only renewable energy, okay, cool. So everything else we do in this world is consuming renewable energy. No. So why waste some renewable energy on this thing instead of diverting to something more useful?
Of course.
I mean, you know that profitability is only based on energy in mining. So when the miners decide to switch from mining one coin to another is when the energy costs reach the expected return of mining, which means they're essentially just converting electricity into heat. into heat. So they're saying, hey guys, the second principle of thermodynamics is not fast enough. Let's accelerate it. So that's my viewpoint. And I want to say another thing, but I forgot.
I'm gonna skip in the meanwhile, since you were saying, okay, yeah, we don't need blockchain, we don't need this kind of stuff right now. And I would say, okay, we are in a lucky position in Europe and then in the US and in Switzerland with stable currencies. I mean, you with the Swiss franc, you're even luckier. You even got more value out of your currency in the past few years. But like many other countries are not so lucky. And that's why you also see in countries like Turkey, in Brazil, in Argentina, Venezuela, and all these places where you see cryptocurrencies are gaining way more traction there because they're just looking for a stable store of value in a way. And sure, in a way, that's also the US dollar and euro compared to that. But yeah, like we are in a lucky position. And so we can say, okay, we haven't been under a crazy situation. Like the last time I think in Europe was maybe the Weimar Republic or something in Germany or something like that comes to my mind. And then, but there are plenty of examples where, yeah, something where you have a limited supply and you know exactly how it's been created, how much is being created, and you don't have a power at the center that just decides, okay, now we're just gonna print this to hyperinflation no matter the consequences from one day to the next, or they just can make one decision and then just cut off something. And yeah, so that's one thing to keep in mind. I think we're in a lucky position to be able to say these things, and hopefully it's gonna stay that way. And I'm not saying that like Bitcoin is a solution to all problems, but at least this specific thing that you have, we now have the supply, we know exactly how much it is. You can say, sure, you have still high transaction costs, but if you just see it as like an alternative to gold, and so far over the last 12 years, it has always come back stronger. And the more often this happens where it crashes and it comes back stronger, the more trust it builds. And it's digital, there's a high risk, of course. I'm just saying that, we will have to see who the winners are going to be. And that's also why now you get these outsized returns potentially. If like, say, Bitcoin is still around in 10 years, then maybe, of course, it's going to be more stable if it has a lot of trillions already in value, because it just doesn't fluctuate so much if some big company starts to buy a couple. But then also the high returns will be gone. So we don't know. So I'm just saying this could be also a case where you're taking a lot of risk right now, and maybe that justifies some of the returns. But I think over the last couple of years, it has averaged like 100% per year or something like this. Of course, like it can be out down 80%. It can
much
go to zero.
Much more, I think. It was at 3K, the Bitcoin, before the corona. So in the last 1 year, it averaged like 20X.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, that's not very... Okay, I have few things I would like to add to your argument. One thing is, Now I kind of forgot some of the issues I had. I am a very bad debater live. I'd rather read and write
No
and
worries.
think. One thing is that the fact that we have a limited supply doesn't give value. I mean, something being limited and scarce doesn't get value automatically. It get value. You know what else is scarce? Like my used t-shirt. I have like 10 of them. They're limited. I mean, guys, should be like a million each. No, you need to have some also demand. If you
You
don't
need
have demand,
trust. That's what you need.
exactly. Demand. There are people willing to, I mean, people,
Of course.
everybody wants to get my used t-shirt, and there's only 10 of them. Because so far, I mean, used glasses by Mr. Rip, nobody gives a fuck. If
No,
like if the world
I wouldn't say
would give
that.
a
I'm sure
fuck,
some people are gonna
I
buy
wouldn't say
some,
that.
but
I'm sure, guys. I'm not washing this for the next month, so, and will be available also digitally, only 10 copies
as
as
an
an
NFT, that would
NFT
be
or
lovely,
whatever.
yes.
Second, you say that it's decentralized. I'm not really sure about that. Because like two-thirds of Bitcoin mining is in China, and the last time I checked, it's not a republic. And of course, there are incentives to not shut everything down, because you cannot simply say, okay, we are going to add fake blocks with a 51% attack and steal all the money, all the coins. Of course, they would drop down to zero and would be worthless even for Chinese. But they can attack other countries with this. If the Chinese decide to dump all the coins and then divert all the proof of work and then say now Bitcoins are worthless, but first let's sell every Bitcoin that we own. I mean, I'm not sure. I don't like this.
They don't have a financial incentive to do this. That's also part of what the attraction is, that people are incentivized financially to for the network to grow and for it to get and gain more adoption and to keep
Sure.
mining in a way.
But the
But
Chinese
yeah.
government maybe doesn't care about financial incentive. Maybe if there is a war of some kind, coins are not mining anymore. I'm sorry. You keep your digital gold in a wallet that's not mined. That we are running bullshit into it. And then other thing, I like the story of the poor Venezuelan, Zimbabwean, or the Weimar guy who said, "Holy shit, my currency is losing 1,000% per minute. So I'm okay with this Bitcoin," because they are also going up. We have experienced Bitcoins going up. When Bitcoin will go down 90%, maybe they're better off keeping Venezuelan dollar. I don't know.
I'm not sure, not
We
sure.
are telling a nice story in hindsight. So we say the poor Venezuelan guy. Who was able to buy Bitcoin? By the way, I would like to be there when they are like making carpets with worthless coin bills. I would like to be there with the old ladies buying Bitcoin and storing on some wallet, and nobody with guns going around and getting the wallets, or like using VPNs to escape government regulations, and but changing the source IP every time to not get tracked down physically. And I would love to see in Zimbabwe how Bitcoin saved life of people.
I'm sure some
I
old
would
lady is
like,
gonna buy physical Bitcoin from some
yeah, sure. Like
behind a supermarket somewhere. I think some people did that in the US, the last bull market already.
And then imagine, okay, now I'm going to supermarket. I have my wallet with one Bitcoin, and then I need to buy apples, which costs 1 billion trillion Zimbabwean dollar. Say, okay, now what's the step-to-step process?
You have to scroll
I
down
type
all
something.
the commas of the currency, and then
All the
okay.
commas. Oh fuck! I sold for 3 zeros less.
Yeah, and you paid 100 euro in
That's
transaction
a nice
fees.
story. That makes for news, but I would like to see the step-by-step guide how to survive an hyperinflation with Bitcoin. Yeah,
Yeah, I mean,
but
there's
Bitcoin, I
definitely
mean,
some use
I think
case. I'm not saying it's perfect for that, but I think, like you said, with digital currencies and stuff, we're gonna see a digital central currency. Governments don't want to give up that power anyway, so there's no way that
sure,
Bitcoin will
exactly.
take
That's
over
what I'm
that
aiming
part.
for. I would love for currency to be digital, centralized, kind of control. Government should not be allowed to print money as they wish, but they should be allowed to do. Who's going to not allow a government to do what the fuck they want with their currency? That's another problem. That's another problem. But it's, I think, one order of magnitude less crazy than thinking that something like Bitcoin can overtake the world. So I think governments need to get rid of all the paper and coins and whatever. So we'll first we will kill how's it called like tax evasion or other things. And then there must be some rule for like balancing printing more money and keeping the economy stable in the long run, because right now governments have incentive to print more money. They make people happy today, but then what's going to happen in 10, 20, 30 years? I think maybe it's time to switch to the next topic, because they are really connected. Sure. Now.
But we can actually, before we switch to the next topic, we can just finish the crypto part. Yeah, like sure. This. We can say, okay, so what do you think? What do you think over the next 3 years? Do you think it's more likely that Bitcoin will have a higher price than 50,000 or lower price, in your opinion?
I think it's going to reach 100,000 for sure. I'm not betting, but I'm really not interested in Bitcoin. There are other projects that might be more interesting.
Of like, course.
I like the Ethereum idea. I know by listening to several people who are working in the crypto world that the Ethereum network is completely garbage right now, and yeah, it's unrecoverable. So, but by the way, that's a nice idea. I think we weren't able to kill banks as intermediaries for a method of payment. We will never do with the current crypto infrastructure. But we can kill notaries and insurances,
yes, yes,
with
please.
Contracts. Smart contracts, they are amazing. I think it's a nice idea, even though they are a bit hard to... I don't know how many of like possible ideas they can cover. I don't think they can cover all contracts. What if I want to buy a house, and then there are things cannot be loyal, cannot be enforceable, cannot be...
It will take some time. I think we should be able to get there to be able to enforce this, because you would have an easy way to prove payment arrived and therefore the house changed owner or something.
Yeah, sure. But we should get rid of anonymity. So it means you sign a contract, you put your name, you put everything, sure. And then there is an entity which should be allowed to verify that a transaction has happened. So, okay, there's still a lot of governments involved. But the idea is amazing. Yeah. I mean, I would love to have to send the notary to fuck off. And
yes,
just
if we can remove the notary mafia, they're way worse than the fire mafia.
Yes, yeah. Or not just notaries, like a lot of insurance things or contracts in general. Whenever you rent an apartment, if you have a collateral, that can be locked in a blockchain. But in the blockchain world, it's hard to get the loans or other things where you don't have any other guarantee more than the fact that the people who misses the doesn't meet the contract, they go to jail. It's hard to do this with blockchain, but I think that there is a potential, not in the Ethereum blockchain. So few of the people I follow
could be they so right now it's like this. So in Ethereum, they have most development is going on Ethereum, most applications are running on Ethereum, therefore the network is overloaded and congested, and therefore the fees are high and it's unusable but that's because it has been, let's say, very successful in the current state, and a lot of decentralized finance and stuff has been built on Ethereum, and now they're trying to find some solutions to scale it faster. There's like one that's called Optimism that they're trying to roll out together with some good backing, and then they're gonna try in the next couple of months to kind of solve this, but we will see how that goes.
Well, until Ethereum will finally make the final switch to proof of stake, for me it's still garbage. And proof of stake itself, I tried very hard to understand all the implications, and to me, it doesn't really seem like the final destination of decentralized. There seems to be like an oligarchy. It seems to be whose rich is getting richer. I don't know. I'm not sure. Okay, we are saving the world by not destroying trees anymore, but it's still a giant memory leak, because if you want
you
to...
You still need electricity for that. And you still need a lot of electricity.
Yes, exactly. But way less than proof of work.
Sure.
And you still need to, if you want to be trustless, you still need to store transactions since the beginning of time. So the blockchain snapshots are going to grow. There's no solution to this. With Visa, with your bank sends you a statement and say, hey guys, that's how much you have. Either you complain now or you go fuck yourself. which means in 5 years, we're going to destroy everything and the past is forgotten. We only keep 5 years of transaction history for legal reason and for you 6 months, because if you don't complain within 30 days, like last 6 months, you can access other 5 years we have in our data centers for legal reason. And in the end, the past is forgotten. With Bitcoin, in year 3000, we will still need to integrate from 2008 to see if that person has this fucking 30 Satoshis to give.
Somebody bought an NFT in 2021.
I mean, at a point, there will be some independent authority who's going to produce a snapshot to say, guys, all the history of Bitcoin until year 2100, that we have a huge snapshot and we trust it. Yeah. I don't know. I have some issues with that.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting. We'll see. Okay, good. Yeah. All right. So
but I'm following. Just... I mean, I'm angry, but I want to see where this is going. I might change my mind in the future. There are so many things I don't see a way out that I'm skeptical, but I'm willing to listen, even though I appear to be so angry about that.
No, it's no problem. Yeah. All right. And for me personally, I'm just saying that just for full disclosure, I also shared this in my videos that I have I kept my, so I started with crypto investments. It was mostly Bitcoin and Ethereum. So like 70% Bitcoin, 30% Ethereum back in 2017. Went through a big roller coaster, like I already discussed. Also for tax reasons, I held on to it. And then when it was, instead of a 3X, I was in a negative territory in 2018. So I didn't sell and I just held on to it until now. And now in the end of last year, I started rebalancing to get it below again to like a 10% allocation, which is my own personal risk tolerance and how much I'm willing to risk. Allocation. Yes, 10%. Wow. That's how much I'm willing to risk on this because I already realized more than I put in a way. And so like for me, even if this were to go down, it's not as big of a deal, but I'm still kind of enjoying the ride. And also the last couple of months have been going very well again. And we will see. We'll see where it goes either way. I think it has a lot of potential. I do think that I do believe there's a good chance it could be still one of the best running assets over the next couple of years, but we will see where it goes. It could also go to zero. And that's why I also say, like, if you want to play around with this, then I would still mostly go with Bitcoin, not play around with too many smaller ones, because at least there we have a certain trust, a certain use case, as stupid as it may be. We know it in its current state. We know it could fulfill this in a certain way. This, okay, it's limited in quantity. We have more and more institutions coming in. We have some ETFs that are going to come out. I think there's a good chance that it's going to go up in value the next couple of years, and we will see where it goes. It could not happen. I'm just saying that don't allocate more than 1% to maximum 10% of your portfolio to it. And don't go with Dogecoin or something like this. So if you want to be in this space, then I would still go with the bigger, let's say, safer bets like Bitcoin and potentially some Ethereum. But mostly I would still go with Bitcoin if you want to play around with this. And yeah, that's my own take. And we're going to see over the next couple of years how that goes. And this is not going to turn into a crypto podcast. I just thought it might be interesting because I'm sure, sure you're also influenced by this and you see, oh, somebody has doubled their money in a week or something. I should jump in on this with all my life savings. Please don't do that. That's not a good idea. Especially if, like, even for safety reasons, et cetera, if you're new to this, you should really spend some time trying to figure it out and then only play with a small percentage of your portfolio, just like it would maybe if you're speculating on some small stock shooting up or something. So you can use your GameStop money for this potentially.
Yeah.
All right. I think that goes, we can go into our main topic for the day, which is inflation.
Yeah.
And how to protect yourself against it potentially, like my views and your views on that.
Okay. Inflation. I'm actually not thinking much about it, but I should. I mean, everybody should, because okay, let's start reasoning from first principle. Money are being printed. Prices are not going up. That's something weird. Asset prices are going up everywhere. Yes. Now, everything that is an asset, everything that generates an income itself is going up everywhere in the world. I mean, if you want to buy meat or an apple, you still pay the same price of 1 year ago. If you want to buy...
In the US, the beef price doubled apparently since 1 year ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Since when? Okay.
So I heard it in a couple of podcasts and videos. So it's maybe it's like a very, very specific use case. But sure.
The currency is not getting inflated against other currency. Actually, this year the US dollar is recovering a lot, which is good for my portfolio. I'm doing great.
I also have some US dollars, so I'm also happy.
Last year I was so overexposed to US dollar, and the dollar like went down compared to the Swiss franc, for example, and even the euro. But this year is recovering like half of what it lost already, and I don't know. I mean, if there is a difference in inflation levels among countries, this should be the target of the currency conversion. That's some there are theories around that, and it's also intuitive. So if in one country they're printing more money than another, all else being equal, that country with money printing should experience a higher inflation. So now inflation historically, but I mean I might be wrong. I just remember from last 40 years. When inflation went up, other fixed income assets would go up. So even your bank, in Italy, that was like 10 double-digit inflation in the 80s, but also bank accounts were giving you 8% interest, or a one-year treasury bond, Italian bond, the BOT, they were giving you 50%. So inflation has always been, in my experience, something self-correcting. Which means that you keep money on the short-term thing, and they at least should match the inflation. This time, it seems a bit different. If now prices are going up and central banks are not going to increase their rates, there's no way your bank is going to give you 10% return. They say, okay, leave the money here. We are nice to you. We don't charge any negative interest. But then you're losing money because everything else is going up. Which means that this should be like a hurry signal to everybody, and how to protect against it. Probably the best thing is to be invested in assets, whatever asset, assets that are locked to inflation. Which means if you buy like a house and rent prices are growing, probably your house is generating more income because the rent that it can generate is growing as well. So it's an inflation protection, or stocks of a company. That's another inflation protection. So those are like my idea is to buy assets that are safer against inflation. The problem is that they already went up in price, because I'm not the only one who's thinking about that. So now even in places like Italy, where nobody needs to go to Milan to work at the moment, and they can be working from remotely, house prices in the main cities went up during the worst crisis we've ever seen in our life, which means people are already thinking about, hey, by the way, it's better to have a house. People will pay rent. Rent will be like attached to the price of goods, so that's an inflation edge. So just to close this small talk, I think the best way to edge against inflation is to invest in stocks and to invest in assets that generate income. So participate. What does it mean that inflation grows, that the basket of things which are within the inflation basket will go up? Buy those who produce those assets, whatever they are.
Yeah, my problem with the measurement of inflation is always that, for example, I think in Austria it's like 20% or something is the housing costs that goes into the calculation. And in my opinion, it should be at least 40% or something, because most people are paying almost half of their monthly income on rent, and so it's not very representative. And also, it contains, I think over the years they changed a little bit what it contained, and now it contains some things like margarine or some cheap stuff like this. It used to be butter and like. There are some small things where they changed, and I think also we got much better at production and producing things more inexpensively, and also thanks to technology. And now you can say, oh yeah, but the price of Netflix or something like this didn't go up that much. But it's also because you have economies of scale, and you can, like, once you have the whole system set up, adding an extra customer is not a high extra cost. and so they can keep those costs low. But like the things that really matter for people, it's getting harder and harder for, let's say, a 30-year-old couple or something to afford real estate to buy a house and not get into debt for their entire life just for that one purchase and have their entire savings and their future savings just for that one thing. And to me, that's such a high risk as well that people don't keep in mind when they think, oh, I'm just gonna protect myself in that way. Or like it's good for people that wouldn't save money otherwise. Then okay, real estate, good idea. At least it forces you to save money, as long as you don't lose your job and whatever other thing happens where then the bank can take, if you can't pay back the loan, that's a whole other story. But
okay, I'd like to just add a couple of things here just to clarify. Of course, when I mean the basket of inflation, I don't mean the official one by governments, that they have their own incentive to keep them low. Like in Italy, until a few years ago, they were like cigarettes, but the national Italian cigarettes, and nobody, they don't exist. Or also the some kind of t-shirt, the one, the canottiera, like that nobody uses, but they are in the basket of inflation. Like coffee in Italy is in the basket of inflation. In fact, bars cannot raise that cost. So, of course, officially government measured inflation numbers are crap. You should, I mean, I think there is like room for an independent way to measure inflation, this thing.
Yeah.
Second, of course, I'm just saying that houses like rental units or whatever are a good edge for inflation. I'm not like not saying that should be the best one, but it's one of, the problem is that it's usually a leverage investment. And as soon as the interest rates will go up, you might lose a lot of your leverage investment. So
not only that, it has a lot of risks that you can't. We can also do like an entire episode about real estate investment, something else, because it's an interesting topic for sure. And for me, there's a lot of risks that we don't keep in mind. For example, a friend of mine, he lives in a town in Austria, in Linz. And they had a real estate and they were really happy in that city. And then next to them, they built like a home for refugees 2 years ago or something like this. And all of a sudden, the area just the degraded. Not saying anything bad about that, but I'm just saying that all of a sudden it wasn't as livable anymore. They didn't feel safe as much, him and his wife. And I would say that definitely dropped the real estate value. Then there are some things that you just cannot control. And so they decided to move, and they thought, "Oh, we're gonna stay there forever." And something from outside happens that you can't control, and it can change the whole thing. The same thing in Berlin, where I think also with, let's say, if we have more and more socialism in Europe, we don't know, they could cap the rental prices. So what you're allowed to charge in rent, and if you bought real estate as an investment to protect, and you think, "Okay, this is good investment at 1,000 euro per month, I'm gonna make from this." And now the government says, "Oh, you're not allowed to charge more than 600 euro because people are they need a place to stay."
That's a horrible investment.
Great, fantastic.
No, the UBS bubble index, I think, that puts Berlin like at the top.
No. Munich. Berlin is not as crazy.
Munich. Okay, right. Sorry. Munich, you're right. Munich. Yeah. Absolutely. And of course. I mean, I wanted to say another thing. I forgot. Fuck, my brain doesn't work.
No problem. Last time I had brain fog. Today it's okay. If you have it, I can talk a little bit more. Can change things up. I think it's whoever does the intro does more talking in the end. So that's the magic.
But I wanted to say something very relevant. Real estate prices. I don't remember. Sorry.
It's no problem. Switzerland, something related?
It had to do with the bubble
or with
index,
the debt. Maybe the debt, if you take on a large loan.
No, okay, of course it's about rent controls. No, I don't remember. It's not a problem. I forget about it. So inflation. I think inflation connects pretty well with the other topic we discussed during this topic, because like one of the largest argument in favor of cryptocurrencies is that the fiat money is going to trash. And you know, on this topic, we have a lot of experienced and impactful people like going this way, like Ray Dalio, for example. And I can see it. What's the plan? What's the plan for governments? So they're printing money, they're forcing interest rate low, So they are lending the money to governments who they have almost free money for now, and they paid zero or negative interest on this money. So they keep spending, they keep giving money to people, and this doesn't seem like a good idea in the long term. Who's gonna? So interest rates now, they are doomed to not grow ever again, because a country that tripled their debt, but they are paying 0% interest rate. If then you say now, by the way, now the interest rate is 2%, that will finish. Like you end the economy. If I tell you, okay, I give you a Lambo, use it, enjoy it. Now I give you a Ferrari, enjoy it. Hey, by the way, from now on, you need to pay me this interest rate. And I'm sorry, you cannot just return the Lambos. You already used that, and
sure,
they're broken now.
Yeah. I don't think we're gonna see hyperinflation in at least in Western countries. At least let's say you get a more stable currencies like Euro, US dollar, maybe Japanese yen, and Swiss francs. But I do think it's very possible we see like 5 or 6% for could be a few years or something. Like it could happen, maybe. Maybe that's an official number or something like this, but I think it's very likely. And that's also a way for the governments to kind of remove something from the debt, to devalue the debt. This is definitely
all
an option.
Of this without having official interest rates, central bank interest rates going up. So still keeping printing money. This cannot go on forever, and they cannot raise interest rates. So this is the loop that I cannot solve. I mean, they are, if interest rates are zero or negative, government are incentivized to get debt. So this cannot go forever. I mean, if you keep at zero, government will take money and distribute. But if interest rates goes up, then the economy is doomed. I cannot see the end of this tunnel. Of course, during Corona, something had to be done to protect people who lost their job. But maybe, I don't know, if I had to redesign a system from scratch, I would find a way to incentivize people to save some money and not having to rely on government spending on the after 2 weeks that you lost your job. I mean, why we want to go on financial independence? Because we know that we shouldn't rely on anybody helping you, you know, on any promise being maintained by
some
an entity
which or something.
So I would have loved for the situation to be handled by human beings that say, oh fuck, I work in a cruise company. Yeah, I lost my job for 1.5 years probably because nobody's going on cruise. I will get some coverage, but then of course I saved $200,000 and I will consume that. It was planned. If tomorrow there is, nobody is going to buy DVD because Netflix came, the people who work in that industry knew in advance which were the risks. I don't want to say it might be brutal, but I think the more the good hand of a government intervenes, the more they're distorting the market, the more long-term effects.
We have way more zombie companies that shouldn't exist in a normal environment.
Exactly. But I understand. I also understand that during this pandemic was something that it's okay that people didn't anticipate. But this happened on top of already like 30 years of bad spending habits of other government. It's not that Italy was perfect clean before starting this. It's not that the US was like debt-free. So this happened on top of people and governments acting badly.
I hope we won't have any coffee price inflation in Italy, because that's one of the best things whenever I visit the family in Rome is drinking coffee for 1 euro, 1.50 euro, and it's just best fantastic coffee. And then you go to any other country in Europe, it's 3-4 euro upwards, and it's shitty coffee. So
And you have beer at 2.50 in Germany because it's part of the inflation basket. So the CPI, the consumer price index. So whatever is in that basket, you should like before when you want to travel to a country, get the basket of inflation and only buy those things because they are controlled. Their prices are controlled.
So how is inflation impacting your investment decisions?
It's putting me pressure to move to an inflation safe allocation. At the moment, I have still like a lot of US bonds short term. I'm selling them slowly. I don't have the guts to invest all of them in stocks. So I'm holding cash. I'm actually just selling put options. So promising to go back if prices go down, so or getting paid if they don't. I like it, but I would also like to be more in a sane asset allocation. Slowly, my goal is by the end of the year to return to a like a better, more sound asset allocation.
So 80% Bitcoin.
Bitcoin.
80% Bitcoin. Yes. Okay.
All in Bitcoins and a couple of Beeple piece of art. No, but I mean, I still have like a lot of question marks because what do I mean by a sane asset allocation? Should be 100% stocks? Is there alternative to 100% stocks? I mean, alternative in the safer side, not on the crazier side. Which, if I were 25 with 10K, oh, I'll be happy. I would drop everything and see if the world crashed. I will have time. At my age, in my specific point in my path of life, I don't feel like happy with having 100% in currently overpriced stocks. But maybe that's the only way. That's the only way.
Yeah, no.
I don't
the
know.
Problem is that bonds don't protect you as much anymore, especially with all the
bonds, because they are essentially at the center of this government, this central banks and government distortion. So they are not free market. If they were free market, how much would, I mean, you are in the P2P lending. You know that if there is a farmer in Uzbekistan, which is we have a lot of cows. He needs to pay 25%. To get some money for 1 year, no? And you see, that's probably the market rate because banks won't give money to this guy. But would banks lend money to Italy for less than 10%? It's not a nice payer. It's not a good customer, Italy, as an entity. And not just Italy, like a lot of governments.
You have negative rates in Spain and Italy and Portugal, I think. Yeah.
I mean, I would ask 7-8% if it were in free market, and they would be like zombies now. So bonds market says that, hey, I want to lend you money at 8%. Oh, no, thanks. I have central bank that gives me at zero. So I can give you 0.01. Are you okay with that?
Yeah, that was actually that was interesting because like if we think of when the crisis started in March. And normally Warren Buffett does very well with his Berkshire Hathaway when in a crisis. And I remember he said that like the phones were starting to ring, and because usually then he gets some good deals and he can get a part ownership of some company at a very good conditions. And then like 1 week later, nobody was calling him anymore because the government gave them the best conditions ever, like that with basically no security that they wanted in exchange. I think they're doing the same in Europe as well, where they don't treat it as an investment. Oh, just okay, take the money. You don't have to secure anything. Don't have to pay it back.
Corporate bonds are also trash.
It's crazy. Like you can't compete with
that. I think Warren Buffett emitted the first corporate bond at 0% yield. Wow. I remember reading this. I think it's Berkshire. They emitted a 10-year corporate bond at 0%. So hey, give me 1 million. I'll give you 1 million nominal. Nominal 1 million, it's not like inflation, just in 10 years, and 0% coupon in the meantime. I don't know how this went, but yeah, that's crazy.
So, what are you doing? So you're going to try to slowly increase your stock allocation again, right?
Yes, still riding options now that I'm enjoying this adventure and slowly buying. I'm gonna try to. I'm already changing my ideal asset, my target asset allocation, and probably I'm going to put a lot of like value stocks in the meaning of low price to book, low price to earning ratio. So I want stocks of companies that produce good, and so to join the inflation bandwagon. And to see some dividend or whatever, even though I know that it's inefficient, I'm not trying to maximize my returns at the moment. I'm just trying to reduce the volatility. I mean, if I can get really the ideal 4% after inflation, I'd be okay with the money I have right now. So I don't chase 100%, knowing that I can lose 90%. I really want to be as safe as possible, even at the expense of some expected return.
But you're going with the global value ETF, right? Or something specific? I don't know. Like I think, didn't you mention that you have some value ETF?
I have US and XUS. I have two or three ETFs. Plus, I'm also buying some boomer company like Coca-Cola. And I'm looking for other boomers company like those solid businesses. They're also not expensive, but not at their all-time high. I'm looking for them, Intel or CVS, some American or Nestle. I'm looking for companies with like a good dividend history. They don't aim to conquer the world by growing 10x. They have the ideally, I would buy 10 restaurants and then get the cash flow that the restaurants get. I'm trying to get a cash flow.
In theory, like in the past, Berkshire Hathaway wasn't such a bad option, but now I think they're like 40% Apple or something like this, right? Since they bought so much Apple,
Went a lot in growth. Yeah. Apple is a kind of weird company to judge. I have friends who are passionate about the stock. It's actually like pretty, it's in drawdown. And it's hard to judge how much is a growth stock and how much is a value stock, because at one point they are selling a lot of things. They are like, I don't know if you saw the recent Veritasium video about planned obsolescence. No. You know, if you know Veritasium channel, this guy made a video. I mean, it's an amazing channel. It has like millions of subscribers. And it's about science or other things, other facts of life. And this guy made a video about planned obsolescence and saying how Apple has been sued and had to pay a lot of fines because they are doing things which are forcing people to buy new iPhones every year. I think they get something bad for an iPod back in the time. And now they're changing. So what is Apple? I don't know. If they can keep doing bad practices, they can keep selling crap.
Yeah, I know as well. Yeah. Like with Apple, for example, with this planned obsolescence again, last year for the first time they introduced the phones without the charger included. It's like, this is fantastic for the environment. But exactly in the same time, I think they changed the cable. Now it's USB-C to the Apple port, and now people that used to have the previous charger couldn't even use that. Now they needed a different one because they're still connected. And now you have to ship double the amount of stuff, and the savings are gone. They just made some extra money.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, genius from a business perspective, like evil from a society perspective. I'm still more for society than business.
They should give you a coupon. You go into the store and you get it without the packaging, the charger that you need, and problem solved.
Exactly. Even better if you return and use a charger, or you can get a small discount or whatever. Like, you really want to be for pro environment, do something about that. Don't force people.
Replaceable batteries is the first thing we need in phones. We need that again. Replaceable batteries, not this planned obsolescence. Yes.
I define myself, and I know that it's still a contradiction, not exactly, but I define myself as a capitalist anti-consumerist person. So I need to find a way to make the two things work together. It's a bad word, capitalism, because it seems you soon imagine people whipping slaves or whatever, but I'm pro making my money work for me. So that's what I mean by capitalism. I mean, like, if you save money, invest money, you are a business owner, that's my way. But I'm also against consumerism. I'm against inefficiency in all their form. I think the true, like sending your money work for you and avoid destroying the planet or forcing people to spend more money on things they don't need, they can live together. I will need to combine those two things in my brain better than
that. I think the economy will change and then we will value other things more, just like activities.
You will find a different equilibrium, probably. Maybe the world gross domestic product will shrink, but then will be sustainable, like sustainable growth.
It's going to be 90% NFTs in the economy.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Okay. And so for myself, what I'm doing, yeah, like since the last year, I've been thinking about it a lot as well. So I think when the whole thing started last March, it was not an easy time because I was just everything in my mind. I was just going through everything. Okay, how safe is our currency? All the existential questions I never asked myself because I thought, okay, now we're printing so much, like everything is closed. It's just a situation we were never in before. And since then, yeah, not a lot has changed since, like, I think in the US they printed 25% of the US dollars that were ever in existence. They printed over the past year, which is crazy to think of.
Yeah, it's insane. I know.
And it's interesting how this also, but even in the last financial crisis, it didn't impact inflation as much. It's very interesting how this, yeah, the effect that it has. And we always expect something. That's the same thing with gold. Like in people expect inflation and the gold price rises. And now for the first time, it's kind of interesting where this would be the perfect environment for gold. And yet it's down like since August, I think it's, I don't know, down 15% or something like this. It's kind of interesting to see. But there, I think that a lot of people kind of jumped on the Bitcoin bandwagon as an alternative, in my opinion, because it's okay. This is performing much better. And maybe as a hedge, we will see if it works long term. But I'm not a big gold bull like other people maybe who see it as a good, I don't know, extra hedge in your portfolio. I don't see that as much. I don't find it very practical, but to each their own. Anyway, back to the inflation protection. For me, I also think that for me also, I use stocks as kind of the largest protective layer. They can also crash a lot, and I think if we have a high inflation all of a sudden, I think stocks will also be impacted. But I think that then they will maintain their value better long term, especially on a global portfolio, because who knows, maybe it's like a local inflation in Europe or something, or maybe in the US, like it could be impacted higher. We don't know. Maybe then emerging markets are going to profit from it. Who knows? Who knows? So I like to have my wealth distributed everywhere in a way via global ETF. And if like what I'm basing this on is as well, just looking in the past as well, like for example, in Germany at the Weimar Republic, when like the German when the local currency was just had hyperinflation, and that the stock market dropped as well, but then it kind of increased again and kind of kept pace with the hyperinflation, and it was a good protection in the past. And I think
Yeah, of
some
course.
other stock markets have kind of showed the same, but it would be an uncomfortable situation for everybody. So who knows then if you have like some capital controls that are put in place and it's harder to get your money from the bank or whatever. So I think diversification is key, but to have assets that kind of go in line with or kind of increase as well, like we said, real estate, stocks. For me, it's mostly stocks and then a small speculative bet in Bitcoin, like up to 10%.
Would you feel confident if you had like 10x your wealth to invest in the same way? Or if you were 10 years older?
If I had 10x my wealth, I would definitely feel comfortable with this as well. Because for me, I'm not changing my lifestyle as much. So as long as my living expenses are more than covered and you have plenty of years of runway, for me, it's not a problem. So I would still go with this. And for me, it's also, I still like to add like a 15% allocation to peer-to-peer lending. I know you're not a big fan of that. But for me, it's fun. I like this kind of fintech sector and it's quite exciting. And it will be interesting this year to see also with new regulations coming into the space. And it was interesting to experience like this crash and to see how what happened and how platforms responded and which countries were affected in which way. And then you have like the local regulations and people shouldn't pay back their debt for 6 months. It's not a problem. Of course, everything is affected from that. It's just crazy stuff.
The
But
problem I
yeah.
see with that is that if the rest of the world is moving to a 0% loan, how can you still profit from P2P lending? I mean, that you are exploiting some small niche where people still pay 20% to get
Yeah, and
money.
that's countries where they don't have
Yeah.
this banking system as good of a banking and lending system as we do. Yeah, that's true.
Usually, isn't there like some currency fluctuation risk? Because in those countries, probably
Yes.
they have their own currency. So there are,
They have to
yeah.
hedge it in some way.
I'm not against P2P lending. I know that it's a place full of scam, full of potential scams and unregulated. Ideally, I mean, I was holding almost $1 million in bonds until a few months ago. Now I'm at 60. So I'm all in for lending money and getting paid for it. The problem is that we are in a current world scenario where lending money gives you nothing almost everywhere. And where it gives you something, there are a lot of sharks who are arbitraging already. I mean, so it's not a competition because nobody wants to lend money to someone living in Europe. If you go and ask for a mortgage on your house, they will, I mean, in Switzerland, it's 0.6%. So
Yeah,
probably Swiss
crazy.
banks would love to go peer-to-peer lending in Uzbekistan. So there is competition and that's going to go down. So I think if the borrowing market is staying like this worldwide for a while, sooner or later the opportunities in the not developed countries that still where still people pay 20% for money, this is going to be arbitraged away somehow.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's something that in 10 years
No,
can
no.
still give you
It's very
those returns.
possible. And also in the UK, where they have a much bigger market, you saw several platforms where all of a sudden institutions got in and then they said, hey, why bother
Exactly. I
with the
mean,
individual investors with a portfolio of 1,000 euro if we can have a big institution and just deal with
why
them?
should UBS like borrow, like lend me money for 0.6% when they can go and get 5% with some degrees of certainty they will get the money? Yeah. So, yeah, but that's another topic, maybe.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. But yeah,
So,
it's an interesting
definitely.
topic. Protecting against inflation is very difficult because just again, trying to place your bets on exactly what's going to happen, what's going to protect you. Nobody can give you the perfect answer. And I think even Ray Dalio with he timed his saying that cash is trash at the worst possible time in history, I think, when he said it, I think in February last year or something. And everybody who had more cash right before the crash was happy to be able to buy at a low price. And people that were fully invested, maybe after they heard him, they said, okay, go all in now. And they were not so happy after that. So
Yeah,
I think
we're
having
gonna
a
see.
cash buffer is useful at some, just a
Yes,
certain
exactly.
percentage.
Ready to drop it on anything that give you inflation and like money market funds as soon as they will like get some boost. So I think the worst thing to hold right now is long-term bonds because it's hard that the rates will go even down. So yeah.
All right. Do we have
It's
maybe,
been nice.
do you know if there are some questions that we should answer at the end? Do you think, is there
Oh, I
anything
didn't
that
prepare
comes
for
to
it.
your mind?
I
By the
didn't
way,
prepare. I
one
didn't.
question, since last time we talked about brokers, I know that Interactive Brokers, they have a function where you can also lend out your shares, right? Because I noticed that I have that as well in mind.
I
Have you ever
yes,
tried
they
that?
do. I don't know if they do this in Europe. I'm using just vanilla. I mean, I don't use much of their functionalities. I don't use margin loans. I don't use lending shares. I don't use fractional shares. So I know that they have some share lending program. They'll give you some interest if you're willing to loan those shares to someone, which you're probably going to use for short to short the market. In theory, there should be no risk. And I guess that the broker itself is going to be I don't know, part of this negotiation. So if the at one point for some reason the entity disappears, it's the broker who pays you. I don't know. I don't know, but I don't use this program.
Okay, I was just wondering because I noticed that it's also in my account in Europe. You have
Probably
this margin
you
lending option.
cannot sell them options on that. I don't know.
It's possible,
I
yeah.
don't use this. I know that there is the odds, there's the chance of doing this. I don't know if
Okay.
from Europe, and I never explored.
Right. Yeah, I also don't do anything on margin. Even though IB, for example, they have really good conditions for if, for example, you
Yeah.
want to take a loan and base that on your collaterals of the shares that you have, it's
Have you seen
amazing
the, have
rates.
you read the Mr. Money Mustache article about that?
Yeah,
He
yeah.
just bought a house
About the
on
real
loan.
estate, yeah.
Yeah, he got a comparable rates compared to banks for a mortgage, but
I
he
think
did
cheaper.
overnight, right?
Yeah.
Cheaper. I mean, in Switzerland, it's not cheaper. In Switzerland,
No,
it's
no.
better if you get a mortgage than an IB loan. But in the US, probably it was like roughly the same amount, a bit cheaper. And amazingly, he got the money overnight. Say, okay. Let's open a margin account. Let's put like 1 million as there. I go like 40% leverage, so I get 400K, and then I will repay you back with 2% or no,
I would be afraid to go 40% leverage as well for this, because I don't know, like if we see another Corona crash all of a sudden.
I think it put like EB was willing to give you 40%, but he only took like maybe 25 or something on some safe asset. Safe. He didn't put Bitcoins on the margin account. That's a nice option. I live in Switzerland. Here, still getting money is cheaper than margin rates on IB, but cool.
So, are you planning anything apart from stocks to add to your portfolio for?
As I said, I'm writing options.
Okay.
Which is a way to commit to buy or sell stocks. I'm not doing this to speculate. I'm doing this to edge, to reduce. Volatility. In the end, it's like investing in stocks. I've been doing this just to invest in stocks.
And for fun as well.
For fun. I mean, it seems like so far it's a cash flow. I will see how this will turn out even with the tax office, because as far as I know, it shouldn't be taxed, because every income, every like profits for edging your position is like part of the total return of your position. So if I'm selling a covered call and promising to sell in my stocks if they go up 10% and getting a premium for that, my return profile changes. So I will get money right now, but that should be considered like a reduction of cost basis and not profits. Or else, how would I consider if the options then get exercised? It's a loss, I don't know.
Interesting.
If the stocks goes 2x and I need to sell it at just plus 10%, will I have a loss? No. Or so then when I cash the premium, it's not a gain. It's just a different distribution of risk return.
Mm-hmm. So you're planning to write more about options as well in your blog?
What?
Are you planning to write more about options? I think you already have some articles on your blog, right?
I wrote one article. I have three in my head. Okay. I'm writing another one. But if you read I published a post like 2 hours ago with all the things I want to do in the next 2 months, and it's a bit crazy.
Okay. YouTube, so guys, if you're interested, check out retireinprogress.com. You can find all the articles there.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
All right. By the way, I wanted to say that we are now on some podcasting platforms. So far, we're Spotify and then Anchor. Cool. And it's already submitted to all the others. And with Google, I think it takes about a week, but we're already submitted. And also, it should be online on Apple as well soon. So I'm hoping within 1 week, you can find us everywhere. So just search for the Fire Mafia. And you should be able to find us. The two episodes are online there. We should put this online as well. Probably on Thursday, the third one should be live as well. So yeah, I think we covered pretty much everything. Next time, maybe at the end, we can include some questions of yours. So if you have any questions or anything you want us to discuss, put that in the comments down below. And we'll be happy to take a look. And hopefully you enjoyed the newest episode and let us know your feedback. If there's any room for improvement. Also, if you're a specialist with streaming software where you can improve the quality, I think it's already much better than before. And let us know if you have some good tutorials on OBS, how we can make the screen really nice and crispy with both of our cameras. Then please let us know. Thank you guys so much for watching. Thank you, Giorgio, again. Thank for you taking so your time. This is a lot of fun. By the way, I forgot to say next week. Sorry. Next week on Monday is Easter Monday. So we're both going to be celebrating with the family. So we're going to skip that one. But we were going to be back after. And then we're going to see how we progress. And that's also up to you. So let us know. Give us your feedback. Let us know if you're enjoying what we're doing. That's also part of the fun for us to get your feedback and to see that people are interested. And we might try this as well live once. We're still going to discuss this, how we're going to do this. So thank you, Giorgio, for taking the time again.
Oh, thank you, Angelo. I had a lot of fun this time because finally, in the third episode, we touched territories where we are not necessarily like in sync with our ideas. So that I think this is like has a lot of value for us and probably for the readers. So yes, I'm looking forward to next episode in a couple of weeks.
Me too. So thank you guys so much for watching. And wait, before you take off. Before you take off, don't forget to hit the like button and to subscribe. You can even hit the notification bell right next to it. I never say that in my videos in the past, but why not? Let's do that. And also, if you want to check out my blog, George's blog, or my YouTube channel, you can find the links down below in the description. As well as potentially, if you check out the last video, we also talked about our favorite brokers, and you can find all the links to that as well. Thank you guys so much for watching, and until next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye.